I was there the day Horus slew the Emperor.
Hello and welcome to the Iterators Podcast, a podcast about the Horus Heresy game system for the hobby, gaming, and lore enthusiast. My name is Daniel and I'm joined by my co-host Josh.
What's up?
All right, so today we have a special guest on, and he is from the Death and Betrayal Podcast. He is also the LVO, Las Vegas Open Tournament Organizer, a diehard Raven Guard enthusiast, and an extremely narrative and driven player. And honestly, he's just an all-around stand-up guy and with just a passion for 30K. So I want to welcome Alex onto our podcast. How you doing, man?
Yeah, good. Thanks, guys. That was, wow, I don't think I've ever had that many kind words in a row. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on. It's exciting to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you give us kind of a brief background on who you are and what you play?
So from time to time, I would check Forge World, and then Korax came out, and he was in a bundle with a Darkwing Pattern Storm Eagle and Sweet Mordathan Snipers and these crazy Lightning Claw Jump guys.
Oh, yeah, you're like, I gotta do it.
Yeah. I'll buy that right now. So I bought that, and then Betrayal of Kal came out, so I was like, sweet. So I started playing these Raven Guard with Korax and stuff with my buddies in the Garage Hammer, and then I kind of found Craig and Craig's group and what they were doing, and then I started actually playing, and then I got, you know, like he was kind of like, hey, like, do you want to run one of these? And I said, sure, like, I want to do this really cool narrative thing. And I ended up running a campaign that, like, every 2 weeks you had to get your games in and report the scores back to me and give me any highlights, and then I would write the next chapter that included, like, I would write the highlights from the games into the story.
Yeah. So you're kind of like telling the story through the bat rep or the
Yeah, sort of, right? So yeah. They'd give me like their highlights, and then I would pick like what sounded cool and fit into the narrative that was going on. By the time all was said and done, I had 42 pages.
That's awesome.
Awesome. That is so cool.
Yeah.
And so you kind of got that passion for kind of creating the campaign, creating that narrative, and developing it over the course of as the games progress and they play out. You leverage your passion into that, into you know, where you're at right now, which is hosting or, you know, developing the narrative to all 30K events at LVO. That's awesome.
Yeah, not quite all of them, because there is a Zone Mortalis event.
Okay.
Okay.
And I have nothing to do with that one.
Okay.
Is that the guy, is that Jesse?
It could be. I don't know. I actually should reach out to him too and kind of see what he's planning on, because the Adeptus Titanicus guy has reached out. So if you're playing in the Adeptus Titanicus event on the Sunday, which would mean that you're probably not playing in the 30K narrative event.
Right.
Your victory or loss or tie and the actions that you take in that event will contribute to the overall campaign that we're playing.
I thought you were planning something like that, with all the heresy things. I'm not surprised. That's really cool.
That is awesome.
Well, yeah. So like, he's loyalist versus traitors over there, and then we're loyalist versus traitors on our thing. And so we've had a few conversations, and they're going to be in the same room as us. So he's going to
come
over there, and I can add their campaign scores into what's happening on ours.
So it's going to be like a total score. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a good kind of like a segue into kind of what this episode is actually going to be all about. So today, what we're going to break down our episode into three different parts. So the first part is the Return to Istvan campaign, which is going to be held on, I believe, the first day, on Friday, correct?
On Friday. Starts at 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm. And then...
Yes. That'd be the mega battle, yeah.
Yeah, and then also, as well as on the same time, it's also going to be the mega battle at the same time. But we're also going to, and then...
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then we're going to, that's part two of our episode, we're going to be talking about the narrative campaign, so the Siege of Ballast, and kind of your vision for that, coming from a narrative and that role play perspective, and just kind of pick your brain on that and just kind of see what you have in store without any spoilers. And then the last part, we're going to go in like a kind of a deep dive into why you're using the Mournival rules for the event, and also what effects it'll have on the tabletop. And it's going to be so awesome to kind of discuss that dynamic with you, to really kind of paint a full picture for anyone who's going to be either at the event or is a prospective player thinking about getting to the event. It'll be really cool to kind of get your where you're coming from the TO's perspective, and get hyped up about it.
Yeah, for sure. And I've been working really hard to remove the TO label and change it to EO.
I got it. Event organizer. Yeah, I dig it. I dig it.
Event organizer.
Because that's really what it is. It's an event. It's not a tournament. Yeah, we're going to get all into that as we're going through the episode. So stay tuned and let's get right into this thing. And we are back for the part one of this episode, and it is the Return to Istvan campaign event at LVO. So, Alex, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Return to Istvan movement is, and also kind of a background to what Istvan 3 is in the first place, just for the uninitiated, for people who may not know.
Yeah, for sure. So Return to Istvan was a movement that was started by Miles from Little Legend Studio and his gaming group, and it kind of started a little bit during the pandemic with the idea of, like, you know what, let's, like, we're coming up on the siege, let's go back to sort of where the whole story started.
Dope. So kind of like taking it back to like the beginning, so like the origin, so to speak, or the original conflict.
It was really designed to play through this retelling of this future fake historical event. And so the movement gained so much steam that it was now going to include Return to Istvan 5.
Well, and Istvan 3 is a really, and I think for a lot of people, Istvan 3 is one of these events in the Heresy that is really, and I'll just speak for myself, it's very capturing, right? A lot of people get into the Heresy and they start, you know, the original trilogy.
Yeah, because you read, you know, Horus Rising, False Gods, and then Galaxy and Flames. That's like the crescendo of what's kind of occurring of that trilogy. Mm-hmm.
And so you have like this sense of like this, it's this very powerful story.
Right.
And kind of going and doing that is really neat. So now, as far as for, you know, people who may not be as familiar with Istvan 3, what are the options that you guys are allowing for this event, or particularly with the Istvan 3 narrative campaign there on Friday?
Yeah, so this is really intended to be an event for people that maybe don't love a mega battle, so they don't want to play the opening salvo of the main narrative campaign that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
With Istvan 5 then taking place at Adepticon.
Okay, cool.
Oh, that's sick.
So you can kind of do Istvan 3 and then at the next event go in and do Istvan 5. That's
cool. Kind of building off the narrative that's already there.
Yeah.
And that's cool because you're doing the retelling of these, like, these pseudo historical events, right? And then what you're doing is you're pushing forward, and you know, you read about these stories again in the trilogy, in the original trilogy, and to be able to kind of represent that on the tabletop is such a cool concept, and be kind of like almost like I'm a part of that history, you know, in a role play aspect. And that's so cool that you're kind of bringing that into LVO to really have people kind of partake in that, to kind of, you know, when they read back on the books, right, then they can't help but go, hey, you know, my guys were there too, you know, and you kind of have this little story in the back of your mind. And I think that's so awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So you're free to run your 2000 point Centurion Plus list with your custom character that you're going to run through, assuming, of course, that you're then going to play in the main narrative 2-day event. And that's really why it's a 2,000 point Centurion Plus list for this event, as opposed to the 1,500 point Centurion list that the original sort of idea of Return to Istvan grew from.
So the reason
for that is that you're then going to need your 2,000, 3,000 point for the next the next event.
So that way, like, if you're going to the event, you don't really have to bring, okay, I have to bring this list and I have to bring that list. It's kind of compartmentalized so that, you know, from a real life perspective, it makes logistics a lot easier. And then from a narrative perspective, it's, hey, these are the same guys that are now progressing within the Heresy to the Siege of Ballast, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? So if you did wanted to, say, use Abaddon for your Sons of Horus, like, you could, and then maybe you need to make, like, a slight tweak to your list, but at most it would include one extra model and maybe an extra dreadnought or something.
Yeah.
That you might have to bring along with you.
That's really
before
that's
cool. Moving into the next one. And maybe include your your commander from the 2-day event as, like, a centurion.
Yeah,
if you want to work him into this event, so it's kind of like he's a junior officer, but as the Heresy goes,
that could be really
so cool.
Is,
he grows up.
Is your praetor for your 3,000 unrestricted, Siege of Ballast narrative campaign is the same model, maybe same character, and then you just run him as a centurion there for his
origin story.
Yeah,
almost.
That's
exactly.
Awesome. That's the type of narrative stuff that we love. That's really cool. And then the other question I had, so kind of with Isfahan 3 in particular, right? Everyone knows the story. We all know what's going to happen. We know what's going down. And the vision with the campaign, right? The narrative campaign, that's going to be a story that we're creating, right? And we're going through.
Well, you're retelling it. In Isfahan 3, right? So we kind of know where it ends.
Yes.
So the third mission will, provide a scenario that will allow you to sort of play that final act out.
Uh-huh.
That's awesome.
And the first mission will allow you to kind of really play out the opening treachery.
That's cool.
Right. And on that note, the armies are therefore restricted, right? So if you're a Talons of the Emperor's player, like, there's not really Custodians and Sisters of Silence running around on Isfahan 3 trying to help everybody out and get them to shelter, right? So it's really limited to players that are playing Sons of Horus,
uh-huh.
Emperor's Children, Death Guard, World Eaters, Mechanicum, Imperial Militia, and Solar Auxilia.
Got it. So only the characters or the players that have played essentially, or that was part of that narrative the books, are really the restrictions to it. And it's, again, to play to the fluff, to play to that narrative, to play to the really telling the story, mm-hmm. And so instead of saying, oh, well, hey, here's some custodies that are just randomly chilling here. It's like, okay, well, that if you play Talons of the Emperor, or you play Night Lords or any other legion, there's other events for that, and we will get into that in part two. But for this, it's more of like, it's kind of like retelling like a pseudo historical event that's occurring. So it's like, hey, you're retelling the Battle of Normandy, right? Or the Battle of Guadalcanal. And everyone knows how, I don't know, Iwo Jima ends, right? But it's, the individual units and the individual, players that are involved, not players like game players, but players as in like the players on the stage of battle,
right?
What they're doing and what they're up to, and you kind of get like a part to play in that.
Yeah, exactly, right? It would be like if you're playing Bolt Action Canadians and like you want to replay the landing at Dieppe.
Right.
Right.
Right. Like, okay, I know I'm going to get chewed to absolute pieces on this landing and my tanks are going to get stuck, but I'm here to play a part.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and there is an element of like, what if, mm-hmm. what if I actually like won all these things? And to an extent, yeah. But it's still going to end the same way. But you're here not to win or to lose. You're here to replay the story, almost like you're LARPing on tabletop.
Yeah,
that's a great way to put it.
It literally is. And one of the things I think the Black Book, I know the Black Books mentioned, I think is really cool. And I think particularly with Isfahan 3, it's a really neat opportunity to do this have this mindset. But the Black Books talk about how all of the information contained within them, right, because they're written in universe, but all the information contained within them is a incomplete documentation, right? So when you're, your attendees are actually playing the event and doing that Isfahan 3, it's almost like they're discovering that. It's almost like they're heading to this, they're almost like an iterator or a remembrancer at the site of that battle, right? Kind of discovering that history, because, you know, even though it's not mentioned in the Black Books, that doesn't mean it never happened.
Right.
And
exactly.
So it's almost like, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, like, and since we all know the story, like, the missions are from various Black Books, but they're really designed for that opening event. And then, you know, if you read the books, you know that people got, like, really vengeful, picking out characters, picking out rival commanders, trying to, like, you know, settle their differences where they can, make them pay, like Lucius having that duel with Chaplain Charmosian on the Land Raider. So the second mission's really going to, like, allow for that kind of a story to play out.
Okay.
In the middle of the battle, and then the final mission will kind of be that crescendo.
Yeah.
Well, one thing you mentioned earlier, and we just wanted to clarify, but you mentioned the actual point size is going to be the 2000 Centurion Plus format.
That's right.
Yep. Right? So Centurion Plus, not the regular Centurion format. But earlier we were talking about the kind of the differences between those and how the interaction between those, you know, the Centurion Plus and the Centurion format with those two lists. And really kind of weird talking about how there's really not that much difference, and how bringing, like, almost if you were to take more of a Centurion style list, you could have some advantages. And I just wanted to give you a chance to share some more of those thoughts that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So the whole reason that I shifted to the Centurion Plus, and we can talk more about this in the bar two, was more to make transport easier for folks, because it allows you to take some light vehicles, so you can chew up some points in an easy to transport way.
Yeah.
But if
a vehicle is a lot easier to transfer around than a 20-man tactical block.
It is.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, but I mean, if you didn't take any of those available restricted slots from Centurion Plus and you built it purely as a Centurion list, you know, it's a difference of potentially you might run up against some rhinos or predators, or at worst, like a Sicarin.
Right, right.
And the real balance here is still going to come out anyway, because at the end of the day, it's still 2,000 points versus 2,000 points.
Right.
Which has an inherent level of, to some degree, at least, balance.
Yeah.
Second to that, like, if somebody did fill up a lot of their points with maybe some rhinos or predators, those rhinos or predators are not going to have nearly the amount of shots or damage output or armor penetration needed to deal with all the infantry that you're going to have as a result of going much more in the traditional
Centurion
list. Yeah. Right. So you're still going to have crack grenades, which, like, I mean, the Sicarin's like armor 11, I think, on the back end. Even if it's armor 12, you're still glancing it.
So you
on
could
sixes with crack grenades.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a humble tactical squad go in and charge that and blow it up easily.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's similar to, like,
if you've got an assault squad, they probably got Meltavons to deal with, like, the contemptors that you expect to run up against.
Exactly.
And at 2,000 points, a Leviathan can be there. So you might, you know, you're probably going to build your list to make sure that you can deal with a Leviathan if it shows up.
Right. And again, it's still like kind of like that scene of, like, Saving Private Ryan, that final battle when all those those guys just come up and they basically jump a tiger, right? That Panzer, and they're just trying to, like, gun it down, take out the guys inside, and throw grenades down. I mean, it's kind of like, again, if you're going for the narrative or the theater of the mind aspect, you know, that you're kind of playing that out. And then also kind of going off of what you said, of, you know, you're going to have some of those lighter vehicles, heaviest, having a Sicarin out there. You also have, you know, the same kind of concept that you see in Galaxy and Flame book, like what you were talking about with Lucius having that kind of that confrontation with that chaplain on top of a Land Raider. So you have the Land Raider kind of rolling up, Lucius, you know, calls him out, and they have this epic duel on top of a Land Raider as this big, you know, battle is occurring around them. And so you kind of have that, again, to really bring the story to life as you read about it in Galaxy and Flames, as you read about it in Black Book 1, Betrayal. You kind of get that full-flavored feeling, which should be imparted upon the player.
Yeah, if you are playing, like, Emperor's Children versus Emperor's Children, and your opponent just happens to have, like, a Charmosian, and you happen to have, like, a Lucius.
Yeah.
And you want to put them on top of the Land Raider while the other guy drives the Land Raider around? Like,
oh, cool. I don't think anyone's going to say no to that.
Yeah, Like, they, you know, those who have attended my events know that I'm pretty free form. At the last Hecate, I think it was, a guy asked me, he's like, hey, this guy doesn't really have anything left that's worth me shooting my unlimited range missile or whatever at.
Right.
Like, can I shoot it at that table? And I said, yeah.
Why not?
Like, just tell me what you're going to hit and then I'll go roll it for you. And I had, I walk up to the other table and they go, hey, what's up? I go, this guy's shooting a 100 killer missile or whatever.
But see, that's so cool.
At this rhino. And he was like, what? And I was like, yeah. And then I rolled it and I was like, okay, Brett. I had to get his guys out of it.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's so cool because you're not just playing your battle that's occurring on your table, right? Your 6x4 table is not the only conflict that's occurring. There is this larger global conflict that's occurring, and you're just one little aspect, some measly, in the grand scheme of things, unimportant.
Very, yeah, very unimportant.
Yeah, to the larger grand scheme of what's occurring on this huge, opening battle of the Horus Heresy, and you're just playing a little part in it, and I think that's so awesome.
And I have one question for you, and we were talking earlier and you said the event organizer, and I really liked how you mentioned that difference as far as like an event organizer versus a tournament organizer, because it's not about the winning. It's about attending the event, right? Experiencing that event, being, and enjoying that experience to the fullest. And as the event organizer, particularly with the ISFAN 3 event right there on Friday, mm-hmm. at the end of that, what's the best case scenario for you for an attendee finishing up that event? Like, what is the best case scenario with where their head could be at?
Yeah. I would be just tickled pink if at the end of that event, the guys are standing around, they're excited, they're recalling, not, oh yeah, I won all three of my games, but man, I had this duel on top of a rhino, because you can't take a land raider in this, but I had this duel on top of a rhino and it was crazy. Like, yeah. And my opponent Mark was super, super cool about it. And after I like cut his commander's head off, he let me like steal the rhino and the place. Like, it'd be way more about like what I like to call the TSN turning points, you're not remembering whether you won or lost. And I mean, you probably still will because it'll be fresh. But
yeah,
like that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about like, oh, what happened in this game? And man, this was nuts. Like, I just want them to enjoy it and come away from it in that sort of a talk, right? I mean, you go to a baseball game or a hockey game, like, yeah, you might say like, oh yeah, the Jays won, but then you're gonna be like, oh yeah, man, like Bo like just crushed it.
Yeah,
but this is what happened.
Like, it's the moment.
Yeah, he broke the screen by the scoreboard. Like, it was a crazy home run, right?
So it's kind of like when you're. You want guys essentially when they're done playing the game and they come back to wherever respective community that they're a part of, you don't want them to like give a summary of, oh, I won this game, lost this game. You want to talk about the moments and you want them to come back. So it's like a month, 2 months, a year later, you're like, yeah, I went to LVO and I had this awesome event. I don't necessarily remember who won that game, but I can definitely recall this awesome moment. If I'm summarizing your vision correctly.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, I'd encourage you, if you've never played in an event like Return to ISFAN or like the Siege of Balance, like, come try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see if you like it. And then if I don't like it, I'll go back to playing Age of Darkness First Edition.
Right, right, exactly.
And at the end of the day, I want you to enjoy it, but that's also why I'm trying to let everyone know up front, like, there's no podium finish. If you love and if you live for competitive events, this probably isn't going to be the
yeah, it's not for you, yeah.
This one to the next one.
Right. And it's more along the lines of, hey, we're here to tell a good story, have a great time, and to make friends along the way. And really, that's kind of what this whole medium of playing toy soldiers on a table is all about, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The best game I ever played was actually at LVO 2019.
Yeah.
But he was a Mechanicum player, and I was playing my Raven Guard. And I whiffed all 11 Meltabomb rolls on his knight that had one hull point left, And we had just a blast. Like, it was so back and forth. Right. And it came down to like a one-man duel between Alvaric's Mon, who has no invulnerable save and a power sword only, fighting three Volturax and just trying to stop these blades because he's the last thing alive on the table.
I love that.
And he's fighting three of them and dancing around it. And we ended up just having a blast, right? And it was more like, oh yeah, that was crazy when this happened, and I can't believe I missed that role. And you know, we had a smile on our face for like the next hour and a half.
Yeah, exactly. And again,
that's the scenario I'm trying to make, right? Mm-hmm. Because you are going to get people that, you know, maybe they want a competitive feel, but what's competitive for their meta doesn't match up with what's competitive for yours. Mm-hmm. Or they come up with, you know, they still put a little bit of narrative in it, but they built it to really like outperform as much. And so I've tried to create an event where those kind of huge mismatches,
those type of matchups, won't happen. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Or you maximize your fun for everyone involved.
Yeah, but if you come, like I do have a mechanic built in. I'm not going to get too in depth into it. If you come and you like playing the tougher stuff, you'll still end up against those like-minded players at this event. So you'll still be able to get some enjoyment out of it.
That's awesome.
You'll still
be
able to have fun. And you'll still be able to pull that, like, you know what, I love the real grind out. Like, I want to go against that as tough as nails list as I could possibly find. And and if you brought a list like that, you'll be able to play against another like-minded individual.
That's awesome. So you kind of have, you have something for everybody involved.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like, right? That. So if you're the guy who shows up and he's all about the narrative and here's like my fully themed out and it's got some pretty big gaps as a result, but I'm not really worried about that. Great. Right. You're probably not going to run up against a guy who, because at 3,000 points, things can get a little crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you might not run up against a guy who has like a Warhound Titan or like a defense battery with that D cannon or whatever. Those people will more end up against themselves.
And I think this is kind of a good like segue into part two, which would be the grand narrative campaign that you're running. So let's get into that second part right now. All right, everyone. So let's get into the meat of this episode. Really kind of the crescendo of LVO and kind of what the whole weekend of LVO is going to be all about. And it is the main narrative campaign, the Siege of Ballast. So, Alex, we are aware that you're playing your cards close to your chest as far as what the mission is and a lot of the particulars and specifics.
The narrative juicy details.
Yeah, the juicy details, exactly. So here in our local community, we love to look at battles from the perspective of a commander and role-playing what's occurring out on the tabletop. So with that being said, something within the military community, when you get a brief, you have something called warnos or warning orders and fragos, which are like fragmentary orders. So a warno is the general situation. So I want you to mentally prepare yourself for that and get yourself good to go in order to be a part of that campaign or that mission. And then once, you know, as it gets closer to actually executing said mission, you get what's called a frago or fragmentary order. And that is essentially like, okay, now that you're on the battlefield, here is the exact mission or situation that is directly before you and what your commanding officer wants you to execute. And so when you want to translate that from a military ideology to the tabletop on this toy soldier universe that we play in, the Warno is essentially the grand scheme of what's occurring on the Siege of Ballast. Mm-hmm. And when you get on the tabletop and you receive your mission brief, that is your frago. So with that in mind, what is the Warno, so to speak, of the Siege of Ballast? And that you kind of, again, for all prospective players that may be being a part of this community or a part of this campaign, and also guys who may be on the fence about going, to kind of get their creative juices going and kind of get that starting the role play aspect of what's going on. So if you can kind of give us the Warno, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. So like the sort of there's going to be a pack that's going to be released soon that's just going to kind of have, it's going to reiterate sort of how to build your forces, like what to think about from that perspective. And it'll kind of have like the prologue, right? So the Siege of Ballast is named for Bally's Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, which is where LVO has been fought over for years. And so now, while we're also sort of transitioning into this much more narrative focused, which I think LVO has kind of been moving in that direction for the last few years anyhow.
That's awesome.
But there is a real sort of shift that's happening with this particular event now that I'm sort of the EO. And with that, the venue has also moved to Rio. So now we're really sort of playing out in this future fake history sort of event, the Ballast system, which was so crucial for so long to really the housing of the Imperium and the Civil War that we've been fighting over for years.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
And so if you have to think about it in terms of this has all kind of come to a head, it's an incredibly strategic world. And we're either going to take it and defend it, or we're going to take it and leave it, we're going to lose it and leave it, depending on which side you're on. So for the opening salvo, it is going to be a loyalist-held world.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
And the traitors are going to be making their big push. So with that battle, you're able to bring, and you're encouraged to bring things like Titans, like Warlords, and all the crazy big guns and Primarchs and unique characters.
So it's
because it's
that is the opening mega battle, the traitor assault onto this loyalist home or this loyalist world. Exactly. Is that opening mega battle on Friday? So
I see.
So you're gonna represent. Oh, that's sick. So it's almost cool. Like yeah. that entrance, that Skyfall.
It's almost like the Battle of Normandy, like that initial beach landing, mm-hmm. right? Where it's just, we're literally going to get everything. The Allies are going to get everything and chuck it at the Nazi line, right? Or on the beaches. And they're just like, no holds bar, just go at it. Just, yes, you know, have at
exactly.
it. Right?
Yeah. Here's your like roll of Pervitin, take it and get going.
Exactly.
yeah. And if you're on the loyalist side, here's a container full of bennies. Like,
yeah.
Get out of that boat.
Right.
And then so kind of how the next day will start will depend on what the outcome from that.
So this is a branching campaign. So, cool. so to a degree, you can say you are just as in the unclear as the attendees.
You're a spectator just like all of us.
Exactly. So, you know, we land, the Primarchs lead their forces, if they're there, to make sort of this big push, but then Terra's calling, like they don't have time to hang around and, you know, dick about, I guess, with this system, but it's still required. So that's where the orders get passed to you as a commander.
Right.
Or, you know, if maybe you've based your character on a person from history. And if you're wondering to yourself, like, well, how do I really give myself this, or how do I really give this character some life so that I feel like he's somebody and that I'm invested in the story I'm playing, go back and listen to the Iterators episode on how to make a character. I think
it's we appreciate that.
It might be episode 4, I think, actually.
Yeah, it's episode 4.
Correctly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so go back and listen to episode 4 and use that to get in your headspace of your commander. And that will help you build your 2,000 point Centurion Plus list for what this is the core of my force. Think of that as his company is... That's typically what he leads, but now he has an additional requisition capability of 1,000 points extra.
Okay, that's cool.
I dig that. I like that.
That's cool.
So it's kind of like, you know, you're this Centurion Plus, as a Centurion Plus, here's your Warlord, your Praetor, your Centurion, right? And then from there, it's like, okay, hey, you got an attachment, you know, of, you know, this or whatever the case may be from, you know, you know, as far as the backlog goes, or, you know, from the armory, hey, we need you to have this, right? on the battlefield for this battle, and
for that entering, you know, mega battle.
Well, you have the mega battle first, but then after, as you start playing the game, and let's say you only start with, like, let's say Centurion Plus, right?
Right.
So you have those 2,000 points of stuff, and then, you know, you get more guys to come in on it, right? Mm-hmm. And as these more guys come in, or essentially, like, you get a call from, like, let's say, you know, but your battalion commander, right? And he's like, hey,
this is the maining.
Yeah,
we need you
to go take this thing over here, whatever that important thing is, right? Whether it be whatever objective it is, right?
Yeah.
And then you are the main effort, right? And the supporting effort is going to be this attachment, right, of whatever thing that we're going to give you. And, you know, and so when you start getting into, your headspace of what you want to kind of, like, when you're building out your list, it's like, okay, it's not necessarily I need to put this unit because it really functions well with that, you know, in my 2,000 point list.
Right.
You know, when you're comprising your 3,000 point list, it's more along the lines of, hey, you know what? My commander gave me a Sicarian or gave me whatever the heck it was.
Well, you know, my men and the leadership that I have has gained access to parts of the larger armory, right?
Exactly. You're just playing this like a little like a section of the larger fleet,
right?
You know, from the fleet,
their larger siege of ballast,
exactly.
Right?
Like if you're a part of like a littoral regiment, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're just one company of like infantry, right? Mm-hmm. And then from there, it's like, okay, well, hey, guess what? Now you have I don't know, AAVs attached to you, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then good to go. You do what you need to do to take care of this objective. We understand that you need a little bit more like firepower. You need a little bit more armor. You need a little bit more of whatever it is, right? As your commander, or your CO, right, I'm going to give you options to take this, right, to go secure that objective. And you, as the player, then get to kind of decide, what would my CO give me?
Yes.
Instead of like, oh, I need to kind of...
Well, more what would I request of
CO, oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
that's a better way to put it.
About it in terms of like the stories, like those first three books we were talking about in the first section, right? The world of murder is there and they don't really know what's going on. So it's like, Loken, you're a line captain, get down there and figure it out. And he goes, well, I'm probably going to need a little bit of extra, so I'm going to need Tarek and what Tarek brings. So when you're building your list, you can very much think about it in that same, and this, I mean, this is how I would do it. Obviously, you don't have to follow that, but I would have my main commander and then his, you know, the rest of the 2,000 points sort of around him. And then I would create my Centurion to kind of be whatever's leading the alternate add-on.
Yeah.
So maybe I need a tank battalion, right? And I need a series of Predators and a Sicara and a Land Raider or whatever, right? And I need that to help back up my line company of tactical Marines with veterans and my dreadnoughts that always provide fire support for those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as an example.
And I like what you said there with having your secondary HQ, right? Because you have your 1-3, so your 1 mandatory and up to 3. So you have those extra slots. And normally when playing a 2,000 or 3,000 point game, you're going to have a second HQ. So it's like theme that second H, almost that 1,000 points in that second HQ, you could almost tie it together.
That's a cool
idea. And I'm thinking even from like a painting perspective, it could be really cool to have all of your 2,000 points with your Praetor, you know, have it all be the 22nd chapter, right? And have that marked on them, you know, throughout the painting, and then on your 1,000 points and your secondary HQ, you know, kind of like what you said, if it's a tank division, you're running Predators and Sicarans, have all the markings for that, those tanks and that secondary commander be in line with one another. And that could be, it could kind of represent that those different elements of the chain of command that you are being pulled together to go about accomplishing this combined arms operation, which is really interesting, really
it's
unique.
Neat. It really is, because it kind of really gets your creative juices going. And instead of, again, list building based off of, okay, well, what's good and what necessarily works best together, it's more along the lines of, what's the story trying to tell me?
Yeah.
You know, and almost letting the story take control as opposed to let the meta or the red books take control. And I like that. I love what you're doing with that, man. So,
Sorry. So I was just going to say, like, and that actually ties into probably the easiest way to build this list too, which is build your 2,000 point Centurion Plus list and then tack 1,000 points onto it.
Exactly. And I love how you get that that concept of, again, we're looking outside of the story and looking actually into how you the whole list building part. It's getting your 2,000 points, right? And then adding that extra 1,000 points for the total of the 3,000. It's such a cool concept. Because again, you're not looking at the red book. You're not letting the red book dictate your list building. You're letting the narrative, you're letting the story drive what you want to create. And I think the way you did that is such a cool idea. It's such a great way to kind of, again, tell that story, you know, and really be a part of the larger narrative that's going on. Like what this table over there is doing and what that table over there is doing and what I'm doing, you know, it's all these things are all interconnected and you get to kind of be a part of this. It's not like, instead of looking at it from a selfish way, right? It's looking at it from a selfless way. Like, hey, I'm a one part of this larger story that I'm telling, and I want everyone to be, get in on it. I want to get on and everyone's fun. And really it's kind of like a mutual benefit. It's like a mutual or beneficial, like a story that everyone gets to participate
in. And everyone tells together. And it's right. Almost like this mute, like you kind of looking at it from, and it's like the, you're expecting the best out of everyone, where everyone is just here to have a fun time. And you know, there's no personal connection to the results of the games.
I love that. Yeah. So exactly. And so, I mean, that's why we won't have any prizes for performance.
Yeah.
Prizes will be based around, first and foremost, like, you know, hobby and narrative. So, like, there'll be a prize. I'm working in a mechanic that I'm not going to share just yet, but, like, that will kind of push the narration a little bit. So, if you're going after those sort of things, like, then you might end up with a little bit, you know, you'll end up with a prize or inside the prize.
That's awesome.
Raffle for that award. Right. And they'll be awarded for painting and like best in show, which will go by a vote. That's not going to be judged on.
Okay, cool.
Because cool. Like
it's impersonal at that point. It's a vote.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think I'm anyone to say like, oh, this paint job is better than that. And even if the three of us decided that we were going to be the judges,
it's, you know, like what makes us three the like more qualified to determine what's a quality right. paint job than anyone else.
Yeah, well, I mean, and there's so many different styles out there too, right? That like subjectively, what I might enjoy or think is a superior paint style might not be the same as what Daniel thinks, and Josh may think something totally different.
Yeah.
So all we've done is just reduce that pool of votes on opinion, because that's really what this the hobby perspective of this is it is an art form. It's a form of expression.
Right.
And all you're doing is reducing that pool when, I mean, we're all in this together, so we all should have a voice on it. And then, you know, and then it's not even necessarily to the paint job. It could be like, you know what, I love this theme. I love what this guy's done so much with how he's put his force together and his commander, and I love how his commander like ties in and maybe added like 1,000 points of a tank company. And I love how that's like this whole sort of separate thing, but still part of it. Like, I like that one the best. So that one gets my vote.
So it's not just like again the paint style. It's more of a full encompassing thing of, hey, how did he put his list together? I love the way he put that and that together. Like kind of what you were saying again, kind of summarizing what you just said there. But it's so much more interactive.
It's like you want to reward people for getting the most out of their hobby. Mm-hmm. It's like it's basically what is kind of, I mean, really what you're like, if we're looking at it on a, hey, we're looking to award, you know, based on this this quality, right? And the person who, you know, distinguishes this quality the most, we're going to give that award. And like everything you're describing is like, the more fun you have with your army, the higher the likelihood of you winning an award is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we've got that called the Herald of Icons, which is like sportsmanship more or
That's
less.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, this was crazy. This guy was such a delight, or I loved playing against this guy. This crazy thing happened and I loved it. So I threw that in, you know, I threw my vote in for that guy. And then there's best in show, which is as voted on by the players, which we just talked about. And then there's the Remembrancer's Achievement Award. I called it that because I couldn't remember what they gave Kirill Sinnerman as a Lifetime Achievement Award, but it's what the idea behind it was. And that'll be discussed at the event. because awesome. The details may give away some story elements. That's kind of the one that I'm most excited for. I kind of look to Andrew Hollis from the Oz 30K for some inspiration on how he's done prizes at his events in the past. And a lot of what I'm doing here was actually inspired by the Oz 30K events and what they do. Like he's had an event with over 100 players at it, and it's fully narrative and built in, and rivalries formed. And there's this notorious Dean Morris and his unkillable Blood Angels Praetor with the Blade of Salty Tears. And like if somebody like that comes out of this event, then I've done a good job. Like somebody's like, I'm gonna be the one to kill that guy's Magus. Like it's happening. Like I'm gonna assassinate it.
That's cool.
That's what'll go on.
Yeah, I love the passion behind everything. I love the passion behind it. But
and kind of going into like again, I know you said that you know there's an award that that again you're keeping to you're keeping those cards again. Like I said, close to your chest. We're not trying to get into spoiler territory or anything like that.
Yeah.
When I was reading the mission brief that's on Frontline Gaming's website. There's a part that you talked about where there's I was really excited about your idea with the Manila folders and mm-hmm. so and keeping the missions secret right until like again the mission that being like the Frago right so is this going to have something to do with whether you're traitor or loyalist or what's exact like the how again without going into spoilers right we don't want to like spoil what's going on or how things are going to go down but just kind of like to kind of expand upon that kind of that concept that you have and kind of how that plays briefly how that plays out
war as in all things are not totally balanced and although we're using balanced points levels I have to add that imbalance for lack of a better term. Maybe excitement or intrigue is a better word for it.
Dynamicism.
And so there'll be kind of two storylines that you'll end up playing out, which will be less dependent on if you're loyalist or traitor and more dependent on who wins the mega battle. And so depending on who gets put on the back foot. But when I say that there's two, that's because when you get your mission pack, let's say that the loyalist managed to hold off the initial assault. So then on the start of day two, it's a loyalist held planet. Then you'll get your defending folders, right? Which will really only be relevant for the first mission, and then but the storyline will grow from there.
This is like a narrative experience.
That's the best way to say it. Because when each one of those missions is only going to have your half of it in it,
huh?
If I'm up against Josh, I don't know what Josh's objectives are. Because in reality, I wouldn't.
You have no, yeah.
Because that's how it works in, like, you know.
In real life,
yeah. Exactly. Like, you know, there's always that saying, well, you know, your enemy has a saying in what happens too.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah, exactly. It's,
and you may not know what your enemy's objectives are, right? When you're going up and you're trying to, there's a part, you know, in like the situation, right? When you're getting your brief, and it's called the draw D, right? And essentially it's what is the expected result, and I'm paraphrasing, but what is the expected result of what your opponent or what your enemy is going to do, right? Are they going to delay you? Are they going to attack you? What are they going to do? Are they going to withdraw? Like, what are they going to do? And that's just a, for lack of a better term, a guesstimation, right? And that is, I mean, it's kind of funny because you're looking at this is a NATO way of how to give a brief and how to go about a mission. Yet when it gets to the opponent part, it's at the best a guesstimation.
It's a guess.
Yeah, it's a guess. Well, it's like, well, based on what we're going
to you on the tabletop to try to figure out what the objective might be from your opponent. Right. And to some degree you should be able to at least infer some guess, from based on what your mission would be,
right? And one based
at least
on
to a degree, and obviously you're going to want to protect your commander at the same time, so it should add a layer of tactical depth.
Yeah,
hoping it will add a layer of tactical depth that we typically haven't seen, and you know, help illustrate, right? Because you guys make a good point, like in your character episode, like he has flaws, and so what would he do? And if you think about it from that perspective, like, okay, what would this Marius down here on the field do in a situation like that? Like, he knows that he needs to do X, but what would he think that, you know, Y is going to come out of his opponent? So what would he do in response to that based on the resources that he has there, right? And then you're going to want to try to obviously create that scenario or that victory or achieve your objective while trying to hold your other enemy at bay and find out their objective.
Well, it almost, I love what you said about it. It adds a layer of tactical depth to the mission that we don't see, because typically when you play a Heresy game or, you know, you're playing a tabletop board game, the mission is always clearly known to both parties. So you almost have it truly becomes a competition over those objectives, and because those things are clear, right, particularly if you're doing like the classic 5 or 6 objective points or whatever, then you're very clearly fighting over those objective points. And so it becomes something where, like, you know that your opponent's going to commit to that.
Like, you know what the mission is of your opponent.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you know where they're going to commit. You know that they want those objectives just like you do. So And then in this, it becomes different because you move, if a unit makes a move that you weren't necessarily anticipating, it makes you second guess. It makes you second guess a lot of things. It makes right. you second guess, hey, you know, number one, they didn't move, they moved backwards and I thought they were going to move forwards, right? So what, you know, what, number one, I assumed something wrong about what they were trying right. to do. So I need to kind of take a step back, and it adds this layer of self-doubt. With your decision-making process that you have to overcome,
You have to, again, role play.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because now you have to role play that, like, that move mm-hmm. to your, you kind of, as a player, you have to relay that information,
right
from the meta of yeah. being outside of the universe to relay that to your commander who is in the universe seeing this in real time, going,
right.
what just happened and why are they doing that?
Yeah, and if you're in a fire...
That intelligence would likely get shared. So, like, let's say mm-hmm. you figure out what the guy is trying to do. I would shout it out to the two other
loyalists cool.
on the table. I'd be like, I think this is the mission, guys, and try to, like, share a little bit of that intel.
That is right? awesome. I'm sorry. I got really excited right there.
Yeah, because you don't need to keep that to yourself, right? Because, this is a group event that we're all trying to participate in a war
because
effort.
It's kind of like...
I think I know what the mission is. I'm going to share that intel.
Yeah, of course.
Because I want my team to succeed in this war effort. Because I want to hold this planet.
It's almost like you're calling in, like, hey, from, you know, I'm one company and I'm going to, you know, my adjacent unit, right? Going, hey, this is what they're doing. This is what I think they're up to. And you're kind of like, again, you're on comms trying to, again, relay, like you said, that information to all your adjacent units that's a part of this larger mission that's occurring.
Are you familiar, Alex, are you familiar with MILSIM events much?
Like military sim?
Yeah, military simulation, airsoft, like that type of stuff. I know there's airsoft, BB gun, like, you know.
I'm familiar with airsoft, like, I haven't played it or anything, but... Yeah, I do get it, like, somewhat.
Well, it's almost like, so a lot of there's a lot of, and I'm not involved with this at all, but I've seen, and I'm aware of the hobby as well. And there's a lot of military simulation groups that will go and recreate, sometimes recreate battles, but they'll also go and create their own operations to kind of experience that as a military simulation event. And this is almost the same thing, but... It's at a different level. Obviously, you're not going out in the woods for a weekend and doing that, but it's more so like the officer right. side of things, right? And you're almost role playing that commander, your HQ, and then bringing in and looking at it from and it truly is a team war. It's truly a war game event more so than it's not necessarily like a campaign in the sense that I was originally thinking before this, where it's like, right. oh, you play mission 1, mission 2, mission 3, and they're all preset and you just kind of do it, right? It's more so they are still preset, but this is like a changing and free-flowing, free-form, you know, ongoing narrative that is really unfolding like as it happens, and you're experiencing it with the others experiencing as well. That's so freaking cool.
That's an awesome. Yeah. That it is so cool. I don't think I've ever been a part of an event like this before.
No.
Like this is,
I feel like it's like the event that everyone kind of wants and like thinks about like, oh, this would be so cool. But logistically, like no one has really figured out how to do it. So,
right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully it works out, but
yeah,
I think I got it correct.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're very passionate about it. I'm sure you figured it out.
So, people tell me I'm sharp, but we'll find out.
Right.
Well, I guess this is a good segue into, like, again, we're getting into the narrative. We're getting into the story. We're getting into kind of replicating that onto the tabletop. We're going to start talking about essentially the inspiration for the battle. That everyone's going to be like participating in all that jazz. What is the inspiration in real life or lore background or anything of that nature that you're, with the vision that you have?
Yeah. And was there any inspiration from history or without too many spoilers?
Yeah.
Yeah. So not really from history. I looked at this as like, okay, the venue is changing. The quote unquote spirit, maybe, I guess, of the event is changing. There's a lot of shift from what used to be. And I mean, particularly after COVID, this really is like kind of a fresh start. So I kind of thought about like, well, what would this look like if there was sort of this last big explosive thing for a system on the way back? And so I kind of thought about like Beta Garmin as an example.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then I took inspiration from just the naming conventions, right? So, which are probably a little hokey, like it's, you know, the ballast is this planet inside like the Vegasian stars, and which is just like Bally's Casino in Vegas.
Cool.
So maybe I could work on some creativity from that perspective for future events, maybe. But
I know, but I mean, there's almost like this weird meta aspect.
Yeah,
it,
no,
like,
I think,
and
it's
that's cool,
cool
because that's literally the place that it was located at, and it's kind of, you're grabbing inspiration from literally a geographical point
from the existence. It's almost, it's like ironic, and it's ironic, but it's also like it's fun and it's self-aware.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly
cool. Yeah,
self-aware. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, exactly right. And so building up above that, like the whole no unique characters thing was actually a request from the guys in the Las Vegas Open group.
Oh, dope. Okay.
The guys and the girls in the Las Vegas Open group. So typically when I run an event, I go, you're limited to one unique character. So that way you can't get like crazy Death Stars. Particularly in smaller events, I'll do one unique character per event. So like you can only have one Perturaba running around or only one Sanguinius flying around, with the exception being Alpha Legion units. So if Alpha Legion players could have only one unique character, but it could be duplicates. Right, so you could have like three Alpharii running around, you know, maybe two Armillus Dinats and five Exodus at an event.
That's cool.
But yeah, the vote, I don't do a lot of polls because I find if you do that, then you tend to get in a headspace of trying to cater to everybody, and then nobody's happy. Yep. It's kind of like if everyone compromises, then nobody left content.
Right.
But that was one that I figured I would ask about. Would help give me some direction. And so that came out of it, and it actually is going to help, I think, create a more immersive event, and it'll fit into the actual overall lore of, you know, the war effort within the Hortus Heresy, because while somebody might make a quick stop off to help push on anything, they wouldn't necessarily stay there, or else we would have heard about it.
Right.
And so that also led me into the inspiration for bringing like the Mournival Events stuff into it. Because if we're talking about this is your character and this is the force that he typically commands, that's such a unique experience that Mournival allows you. And really, I mean, if we're talking about paint on a shelf or paint on your palette, Mournival Events adds more paints to that palette. So that way you can truly create a unique piece of art on the table. That is going to come into that. So if you've always wanted to run a destroyer company, like now you can.
Yeah.
Right? If you're a Raven Guard player, like, okay, Katie's next can't be there, but maybe like the next in command of the Raven Guard Mor Attack Corps is.
Yeah.
Right? It's a detachment
if you can't run
from
a whole army of Mor Attacks, you can now run a destroyer corps, which would, if you've ever read the Primarch novel Korax, like he sends the Mor Attack Corps in. and it's basically like a destroyer company.
Yeah, the fury of the vengeance of Korax.
yeah, exactly. It's one of my favorite scenes in any of the books so far. Like, they just throw them on one-way boarding torpedoes, and they go. If you may, and it's the only time Cadus Nex has showed up like in the actual lore outside of the Black Book.
Uh-huh.
And he just kind of comes over the radio, and he's like, make it to the loading bay. We're leaving on lighters in like 15 minutes. and it's like, either you make it there and you leave, or you don't and you just die.
Damn.
And they're like, whatever, you guys were like compromised anyway. So the whole inspiration for the Mournable thing is really just to add even more flavor to it.
Right.
Up and above just the Centurion Plus sort of aspect of it. So with that, we're including the Mournable Events rulebook, the Mournable Events battle manual, and the Mournable Events FAQ, which kind of adds a little bit, you know, brings some of the more outdated units and items kind of up into the same sort of wheelhouse as the other ones, mm-hmm. and helps bring some of the ones that have maybe run away a little bit too much in the past down.
Yeah.
To a more manageable level.
Yeah. It brings in a lot of balance. And then as far as, and just out of curiosity, is this maybe one of the first heresy events of this size to use Mournable here in the US, or is, and I might not be aware of other events, but as far as I'm aware, this is probably
in North
the first.
America, yes.
That's
this
awesome.
This will be the first time that that anything other than official Forge World rules will have been used in an event in this sort of scope.
Well, that's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, smaller local events have used like things like Centurion or Centurion Plus or Mournable Events units in the past, like smaller metas here and there. Insofar as I know, because I don't believe Warzone Houston used it, and I could be wrong, but as far as I know, this is the first time that something like this is being done.
Awesome.
In a capacity like this.
That's awesome. That's really cool. That's really cool.
Is. Yeah. And just kind of, and unlike the way that you kind of painted that picture, no pun intended, is, yeah. you know, it's more on your palette of, you know, if you're an artist essentially of this list that you're putting together, you're assembling them, you're painting them, you're creating this backstory and this narrative to your boys. Right. And what you're doing is, by allowing Mournival units and you know, rites of war and all that into this event, into LVO, you're really kind of creating, you're allowing the narrative to have more freedom, to have more of that artistic flavor that you want to put on your boys. And yeah. I really like the way that you, again, getting back to kind of that original thing that you said, I really like the way that you mentioned that, and that how you kind of painted that picture. And there's no better way to put it. but yeah, that's awesome. So I actually do have a question, is, and mm-hmm. I think it's on a lot of people's mind, mm-hmm. and it's, what happens if the rules change? So there's a lot of talk right now of, there's a lot of rumors being thrown around right now within the 30K community about 30K possibly going to a Horus Heresy 2.0 rules and all that. This isn't an episode about that, but we want to ask, are you prepared for that? Is there, like, if something does go down between now and the end of January, do you have like a contingency plan, or what's your take on that, and what should, I guess, the prospective player look to? What do they
need to know?
Yeah, exactly. What do they need to know about it?
Perfect. So, I do have a contingency. Now, LVO in the past has always had the rule, if rules come out within 30 days of the event, then they won't be used. Right.
Okay.
So, like, let's say a Black Book drops like January 15th. I mean, I don't think there's going to be any more Black Books, but with Dark Mechanicum, then you wouldn't be able to use that rule set, because not everyone's going to have the chance to get that book. And,
right.
And it's going to be new and it's going to be crazy, right? So let's say like January 1, they do like a real Sega Dreamcast on us, and they're like, guess what? Like, this new box set and new rules are available today. Get down to your GW right now if you want it. Like, we can't guarantee that everyone's going to be able to get that within 30 days.
Right.
Especially with logistics and supply chain issues that are going in. Just having life and getting it
built and painted.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that. Second, the Centurion Plus, which I think is probably, the 2,000 to 3,000 points, Centurion Plus to Frontline, I think may be where a lot of that sort of worry comes from. At the end of the day, Centurion Plus is really, at 2,000 points, you have to take a minimum of 4 infantry units, and you can take a maximum of 4 non-infantry units.
Mm-hmm.
That is still going to exist regardless of, even if this, say, radically went to, like, exactly a copy-paste 9th Ed, which I don't think would be the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll still be very much in the wheelhouse of Age of Darkness, because otherwise they'd have to have a tremendous amount prepared, ready for launch immediately, or else, you'd be sitting there waiting as a Talons player for your new Talons book to come with a fully updated thing. And,
yeah.
Is that in a wheelhouse of possibility? Sure, I suppose it is, but I don't believe that's the case. But okay. You'd still have points, and you'd still have infantry or bike as a type, or tank as a type or whatever.
Right.
So you'd still be able to fit within all those constraints, if you want to call it. Your list wouldn't necessarily have to change unless the points values change, and then maybe you can fit more stuff or less stuff.
And so if the point values change, or if something
if
like
we
that,
did get a whole new edition, like worst case scenario, right? If we get like a whole new edition.
Yeah, so let's say it's fully on its head, it's just like 9th Ed, and we get it like December 15th, which would be in excess of 30 days before the event, because the event starts on January 28th. So let's say we got all those things, then unless somehow the Mournival events guys managed to catch up with the Mournival units, like new updated rules for the Mournival units, then you wouldn't be able to bring those units.
I see. So
and that would be the only difference.
Yeah, so basically
that would be the only difference, right? You'd have to use them as close to whatever the official rulebook unit would be, right? So maybe your heavy destroyers are now nullificators. As an example or whatever.
Right.
But the Mournival events guys are pretty quick. We would end up doing probably is having playtest data to send back to them.
I see.
But I don't see that happening.
Right.
Even if we did get a new edition, I don't see it being a huge shift. I expect it to be more like a 5th, 6th, or like a 6th to 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're gonna tidy up a couple little things. I would expect a psychic phase to be kind of tweaked, maybe.
Right.
Stuff like that. Like they know that a lot of players are passionate about this rule set,
mm-hmm.
and that's not to say that there's not aspects of the other editions that could really benefit. Like you and I were talking earlier. I really like the terrain rules. If you've got a ruined building, you can shoot into or around it, but you're not going to be able to thread your tank shot through. Like the 20 guys that are inside this ruined building with all these rebars and everything sticking out of it through the window and then over a barrel and past a rhino to hit the land raider in the side.
Right.
With that 60 millimeter shell, like the likelihood of that happening is almost nil, even if you're like the best crack shot with a tank. So you can only shoot into and around it. So I really like things like that, but there's things that I'm not super keen on.
Right.
Either way, that's not the road we want to get down with this episode. If there's an edition change, if it's within 30 days, it's irrelevant.
I see.
We're playing based on this. We're playing based on the current Mournival Events Battle Manual FAQ and rulebook. We're playing with the current red books and stuff that you got, because it's not reasonable for anyone to completely shift. And if by chance there's all these supply issues, then people can't get a new book if it happens to come out December 15th.
Right.
Then we'll address that as we need to. But as it stands right now, it's anything within 30 days would be a no-go. So let's say they come out with another crazy character or another one of these, like, because we just got the Iron Warriors Dominator rules.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say something like that comes out like January 3rd and, it's Raven Guard Deliverers. Then you can't bring Raven Guard Deliverers. It's within 30 days.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That being said, if somebody did show up with it, I wouldn't be like, no.
Yeah.
Like, what's that guy going to do? Like, just take his 275-point unit out? You know, I'll be understanding that, but yeah, it's not going to flip the whole event on its head.
Right.
I am prepared for it because I've been expecting it actually for most of the year. But the Mournival Events guys are quick. Yeah. I would expect them to have a fully updated thing before the event anyhow.
Well, that's awesome. And especially kind of, it's fun to kind of hear about where you're coming from, your vision for this event, and then also kind of where, the contingency plans that you have in place. So that if anyone has any, like, I guess, concerns or, you know, maybe, you know, about addition changes or anything of that nature, you have a contingency plan for that. And honestly, kind of doing a big summary of kind of this whole thing is this Siege of Ballast thing is awesome. Yeah. I am so stoked because it just sounds so awesome. And anyone who's going to be partaking in this event, I'm sure they're going to have a blast because it's a lot more, I knew it was a narrative driven event.
Right.
But I didn't know just how narrative driven it was, and it's going to be so awesome. So in any case, we're going to go towards our next section and kind of wrap up this episode, talk about some of the kind of the key high points of this episode and a little bit of like surprises and whatnot and what's kind of coming down the pipeline for the Iterators podcast. Well, that about wraps up this episode. So just kind of a quick recap of this entire episode about kind of what we talked about and kind of the parts that kind of spoke to you and what you found fascinating, Josh. What were things that you just, like, after listening to the episode, you just thought back and you're like, dang, that was really cool.
Right, right. So for myself, the biggest takeaway was definitely the magnitude and the scale of the campaign.
Yeah.
I think that kind of... Before coming in to, you know, before coming here to record this, I had the idea of, oh, you know, there's going to be these, you know, these various missions and kind of, you know, your standard campaign, like what you would see in a black book where you play this mission, then you play this mission. And that's very much what I was expecting and had fully assumed that was the route that the campaign was going. So kind of geared a lot of my thoughts around it. And then after hearing about what you have planned with this ongoing narrative and the events changing, like the whole second day is determined by the one battle, the mega battle there on the first day, and having that direct correlation, it really, I think, you know, those attending are going to have this really cool feeling of involvement with it, and this really cool feeling of like this this event that occurred and their actions, their decisions really created that. And I think that's
create
really
that narrative.
Yeah, and that was really my biggest takeaway. I really believe that what you are trying to do with this event here with LVO 2022 and the Heresy group is really the future of this hobby, and it's the future of what I want to see from this hobby. And I think it's what more people are realizing is ultimately what they enjoy about the hobby. And
right.
I think, you know, here with the Iterators and what we're doing, and you know, you guys with Death and Betrayal, and then here with LVO, and it's all, I can just see this being a really cool future for the hobby, and I hope I'm right about that.
Yeah, it resonates with people.
Yes,
and I really like that.
What about you?
Well, what I really love about what Alex is doing is he's kind of creating that fog of war aspect of the mission. So it forces the player to really participate and more so buy in to the narrative and the theater of mind while playing a game, you know, because you have no idea what your opponent's going to be doing. Or what his missions are, what his objectives are. You have no idea. You just know this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm based on their actions. You're almost kind of discovering, as a commander would discover on the battlefield, what their enemy objectives are. Yeah. Right. And it gets into, and we'll talk about this in another episode, kind of a little bit of a teaser and what's coming down the pipeline of the OODA loop and the philosophy. And the OODA loop is what's occurring in the commander's mind as he's going about the battle, you know, and how that kind of that philosophy kind of is almost like you're representing that that decision making process in this game, in this campaign. And then while you're going through that OODA loop philosophy, and as a fog of war is slowly revealing itself, as you're kind of not dictating, but you're kind of trying to discover what the opponent is doing, or I should say what the opponent is revealing to you, then it's relaying that information to your fellow players, right? So having that communication between players as the game progresses. So as I'm playing, you know, this game, and this guy's playing this game, and all sorts of things are going on, the players of the campaign are going to be communicating with each other.
In the same way that your various lieutenants on a battlefield would communicate amongst one another to actually figure out their plans.
Yeah,
you know, like, in the same way.
Like, what is our enemy doing? Yeah. Right? And they're trying to figure it out. And you're almost kind of building that camaraderie between...
And we only heard about, like, the first two games.
But you're building that camaraderie between other, like, loyalist or traitor Legion forces.
Yeah.
You know? And that's cool because typically those are guys that you normally won't communicate with because they're on your team. So you never really get a chance to play them.
Yeah,
you never
exactly.
have a chance to kind of... Because it's not like, oh, I'm going to be playing, you know, if you're a... Imperial Fist player. Oh, I'm going to be playing Blood Angels next, right? So you don't, it's kind of odd because they're on your team, but you never really like communicate with them, right? But now with Alex is doing, exactly, you're building that camaraderie between loyalists and between traitors. Like, hey, I think this is what's going on, you know, and you have to communicate that with your larger respective team
while fighting your battle.
Exactly. Oh, that's such a cool concept. I love that aspect that's being brought into the into LVO this year, and I think that's going to be such a cool concept. And I think that kind of takes us to the shout outs, and as we're going with the shout outs, we're going to we'll let you take the head on that, Alex, and talk about LVO and some of the prize support that's going to come along with that.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely check out Frontline Gaming. They're the ones that are nice enough to put this on and to let me kind of paint my vision on a canvas for Heresy and particularly this event. The dates for LVO are January 28th to 30th, and there are still some tickets available. We've already gone past our initial allocation, but they've got us covered up to 80 slots. So right now, or the last time I had an update was 44, so it's probably gone up a little bit if you and a few friends have signed up. But we're on track to be the biggest Heresy event. And
that's awesome.
We've got some great prize support coming. So Frontline usually ponies up a couple of items. Hopefully I can swing Forge World into that bucket too. but I'm trying. We do have Little Legend Studio providing some prize support, Conversion World, which has some absolutely killer bits. I've got some of their spears and swords, and I used one of the spears on Solar Auxilia guy that you can see on the at the DAB podcast on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Liber Daemonica is trying to get some stuff together and over to us. We've also got Artel Minis. He's sending a number of prizes.
Got all the goodies, dude. These are all the names.
Yeah. Versatile Terrain is also sending a gift card over. And I've got a few more that are in process but haven't fully committed yet.
Awesome.
And then, of course, anything that I can wrangle up. I'm going to head down to the convention floor and see if I can flex that salesman muscle one time and see if I can get it up a little bit further. But I mean, with the mode no podium finish, I think I've definitely got enough prizes here that we'll have a raffle for some of the folks coming in. So it should be a really good time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, Josh, there's all the names, you know, that if you know anything about kind of the Heresy in general.
Liber Daemonica is like one of the go-tos. Yeah.
Artle W, again, great sculpts, you know, like that are out there and whatnot. Just Little Legend Studios. You have all these like big names that are, you know, known within the Warhammer universe or the Warhammer community in general.
Right.
That are going to be providing prize support to this. And that's just going to be so cool. And I can't wait to see how it all just gets put together at the very end.
Yeah, it's exciting. And it'll be nice to actually travel for once.
Yeah, absolutely. But in any case, I have Oil Spill Painting Studio. So check me out on Instagram and Facebook for any updates on any of my the commissions that I've been doing or any projects that I've been kind of taking care of over the last couple bits and whatnot. I post pretty regularly, so you can check out anything that I do on there. So if you want anything, something painted, especially something that's heresy mindset, I talk a lot about the background and the lore and of your character and your model. So if you want something, especially like a character or a unit, it that you want more than just a painting, I should say, painting a story behind the painting, so to speak.
We're killing it with the painting puns.
Yeah,
today.
All the painting puns today, man. Yeah, just paint that narrative with the painting. Yeah, like I go through that process with my my clients, and we really just get something that you can really kind of just feel good about, you know, at the end of the day. So again, if you have any commissioning inquiries of any sort, you can contact me through social media. At Oil Spill Painting Studio. That's on Instagram, Facebook, all the typical places. Also at my email at oilspillpaintingstudio@gmail.com. And then the last shout out that we're going to be doing is Death and Betrayal Podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks again for having me on, guys. It's been a blast. Keep up the good work, and maybe even pump out some more content so I got more to listen to.
Oh yeah, of course.
We're doing our best, man.
Yeah, no. I'm just friendly jive, but
yeah, I got you.
If you like these guys, hopefully you'd enjoy us as well. Check us out. We're on all the major things except, I guess, Spotify. I dropped the ball on, but I will get on that. Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play. Though we're on all three of those, and even some that I'm not familiar with because they show up in my statistics.
There you go.
Yeah, we're also on YouTube as well if you prefer to listen that way. However, if you want to get a hold of us, want us to do a listener list, or have any ideas, feel free to fire them through. You can email us at deathandbetrayal@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at the DAB Podcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/DAB Podcast. And Craig or myself would be happy to get back to you.
All right, that's awesome. But in any case, my name is Daniel, and I'm joined by my co-host, Josh.
As always.
All right, and we are the Iterators Podcast, and we will see you next time.